everyone. I'm Dr. Terry, and this is the Love Doctor program on Empower Radio, the show that gives you the facts about relationships and love. Now, I've been helping individuals and couples improve their relationships for the past 30 years, and today I'm here to give you science-based strategies for your relationships and those of your children. Welcome, welcome, everyone. It's Dr. Terry. Thanks so much for joining me today. I appreciate you. I have another great program for you today. Now, right now, our country is dealing with a pandemic, high unemployment, a precarious economy, and social turmoil. And as a result, countless people are in the grips of grieving, whether for the loss of a loved one, job security, income, workplace camaraderie, or even a sense of normalcy. How then do you recognize, care, and lead others who are experiencing loss and help them get through this grieving process? My guest today is Anthony Casablanca, a senior executive with over 30 years of experience. He is also a leadership consultant on grief and co-author of the new book called The Dying Art of Leadership: How Leaders Can Help Grieving Employees Excel at Work. For more information about Anthony Casablanca or his new book, go to griefleaders.com. So welcome to the program, Anthony. Great to have you with us today.
Well, good morning, Dr. Terry. What a pleasure it is to be on the show. Thank you for having me on.
Oh, absolutely. And such an important topic that we're going to be discussing. But before we get to the topic, Anthony, tell us a little bit more about you and what motivated you and your brother Guy, by the way, to write the book.
Sure. So I spent 31 years with a company called Hillenbrand, and 28 of those years I worked in senior leadership roles for one of the companies they owned called Batesville Casket Company. And so I spent a fair amount of my career on the death care side of the business and being exposed to that through funeral service. My brother, on the other hand, went to mortuary school, graduated from the Cincinnati College of Mortuary Science with a dual license, and has been in funeral service for a fair amount of years as well. And we have been looking for projects to work on together for quite some time. Having experienced the loss of my dad at a very young age, he was 53 and died rather suddenly from pancreatic cancer. And then the loss of our mother some 25 years later, she encountered a second bout of breast cancer and ultimately succumbed to that mm-hmm. struggle. And then just all of the leadership experiences that I have had over the course of the 31 years in dealing with all types of emotional trauma, such as you described in the introduction. And so a couple of years ago, he and I started talking about this topic, and it became clear to us as we did our research that there is nothing out there. There's a lot of grief counseling work for the individual.
Right.
And lots of books written about that. But there was no one addressing the topic of what to do when an emotionally traumatized employee returns to work. Everybody thinks that, hey, they're back to work, so things are back to normal, and that couldn't be further from the truth. So we started collaborating together, and between my leadership experience and his experience with dealing with grieving families on a daily basis, we were able to come together and co-author the book, which has gotten some really great reviews, some very poignant reviews from folks. Although leadership was the target for the book, the feedback we are getting is that this book is really for everybody, that it should be read by everyone because of the way we sort of organized the book. The first half of the book deals with the funeral process, the grief process, and is really all about grief and emotional trauma and how it impacts people. And then the second half of the book takes that as its starting point and talks about, okay, now these people are coming to work. Here's some leadership models that can apply and that should be used to help those folks excel while they're grieving when they return to work.
And I agree with you, Anthony. I do think your book applies to everyone as we experience others who are grieving and dealing with many types of loss. Now, how was it writing a book with your brother? Was that the first time the two of you worked together, or what was that like?
Yeah, so it was a very interesting experience. It is the first time that we've really sort of worked together in this fashion. My brother is 10 years younger than I am. And we've always had a good relationship growing up. So, and we ironically, or I guess maybe not so ironically, when my mother passed away, we sort of made a pact with each other that now it was just us. And we needed to do whatever we could to continue to work together, be together, even though lives get busy and he's in one state and I'm in another, that we can't just drift apart. And so over the years, we've been looking for opportunities to work together. It was a tremendous learning experience. Mm-hmm. Frankly, I did not envision writing a book when we started talking about this, but my brother, it was actually his idea to write the book. And we are so glad that we did. And it turned out to be just a challenging but enjoyable experience, and actually quite amazing how when he wrote his parts of the book and I wrote my parts of the book, we did that simultaneously with mm-hmm. little to no collaboration other than sort of a brief outline. And it was amazing how the two pieces came together without very much need for rewriting and editing and those kinds of things.
That's
and then
so
I won't even
nice.
Get into the whole.
So nice.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, studies show, by the way, Anthony, that when two people work together on a project or an outcome that is joint, those two people actually bond together more by doing that project. So like you said, it was challenging, it was exciting, but I'm sure it brought the two of you together as well.
Yes, it absolutely did. It absolutely did. And the book is written in such a way that it doesn't have to be written or read cover to cover. It's more of a reference book. So folks can sort of pick up the book and seek out the chapters that seem most appropriate or more important to them than others and read it that way. Or, you know, obviously you'll get the most out of the book if you read it cover to cover, but it wasn't written like a novel where you have to follow the characters through the book. So that helped in the process as well.
Yeah, that's good to know. Also, I can hear listeners, as you were describing you and your brother being in the business, so to speak, whether it be leadership or the funeral business of death and dying and loss and grieving. How does that impact? I'm sure listeners are thinking that. How does that impact you as an individual?
So, you know, it's all around us, right? And one of the major points that we tried to really bring out in the book was the notion that grief is not just caused by the loss of a loved one. It is all of the things that you mentioned at the top of the show, right? Anytime a person experiences emotional trauma that is significant enough that it sort of alters their sense of what reality is, right? The reality that they are familiar with, when that gets altered in a dramatic way, like the pandemic, like the Black Lives Riot, Black Lives Matters protests, like losing a job and the high unemployment, financial situations, right? All of those things, divorce, significant illness diagnosis, all of those things alter a person's reality. And quite honestly, even as we were writing the book, we frankly learned and researched the book. We learned more and more about ourselves and about how we have dealt with things in the past. And frankly, it has shaped the way we respond to people around us today. I just last night, I had a gentleman who I served a little bit as a coach and mentor, and he's a good friend. And it's a young family, and his wife has been battling stage four metastatic breast cancer for the last 5 or 6 years. Was doing tremendously well, and in the last 30 days, the disease has just absolutely taken off, and there's nothing else they can do. And she's gone into hospice and will likely succumb to the disease over the next couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you that my reaching out to him last night through some texts was a much different, those texts contained much different words than they would have contained before we wrote the book.
So tell us, wow, that very sad, by the way. Tell us, what do you say then to someone in that situation? Or what did you in terms of the text? I know that people always are unsure of how to respond when someone is grieving. And we haven't even talked about the definition of grieving, but experiencing, like you said, a sense of reality that is changing, or something changes or alters their sense of reality. So what do you say to someone?
Right, right. It's one of the most awkward situations we encounter. I'm sure we've all faced it. I know I have. And even today, I still struggle with this and have to sort of force myself to change my behaviors. But we've all probably been in the grocery store or encountered a friend who's going through a really difficult time, whatever the situation is. And our first thought is, man, I hope they don't see me because I don't know. I don't want to talk to them because I don't know what to say, because those conversations are very awkward. They are very uncomfortable, and they are and can be very emotional. And so it's a natural reaction to sort of back away, which is actually the problem, right? That is actually the problem, and why very little has been written about this, especially for leaders and in the workplace, because the further sort of removed that relationship is, the easier it is to sort of put your head in the sand and walk away from it. So, you know, the trick is people believe that they have to say these profound things. Mm-hmm. And the reality is you don't. And in fact, the more profound you try to make things, the more likely you are to say something, frankly, offensive to the grieving person, either by saying something that will send a message that you're dismissing what they're feeling, or sending a message that they should just get over it, right? The world is not fair. One of the big traps, we actually have a chapter sort of dedicated to this in the book. It actually appears in a couple of places, sort of the do's and don'ts of what to say and what to do. But one of the big things is people have a tendency to say, at least, right? At least you were diagnosed early. At least you had, you know, 40 years with the person, right? At least you got a good severance package. Well, you know, at the end of the day, that doesn't matter to the person who's right. The person who is grieving, the fact that they got a decent severance package does not take away the fear and the angst of trying to find a new job and the embarrassment of having lost a job, right? It doesn't bring back the person. You know, there is no such thing as a person being better off that some event has happened, right? But right. Those are all sort of the words that we put around engaging with a grieving person. Mm-hmm. And that can be offensive, right? That can be offensive. And nobody
That's
means
so
to hurt anybody.
Helpful, by the way, Anthony. First of all, not that we have to be profound, but there are these things that we say that make it worse, like at least. And it's really, I know listeners are thinking, I'm just trying to at least be positive. I don't want to acknowledge the negativity or the sadness. But that is very good advice, not to switch it, not to say at least. I also know that people always say, I understand. And that is offensive as well, because how can you understand? You are not in my situation. Your wife is not, you know, going out of remission and in hospice. You can't understand. Are there other do's and don'ts that you can share with us? This is so very important.
So on the do side, right, just sort of say what's really on your heart and what you're really feeling, right? People, as you've mentioned, right, nothing you can say is going to uplift this person out of their grief, right? That doesn't happen, right? People never get over grief or emotional trauma. They get through it, right? You eventually are able, your mind is able to reconstruct a new reality around the loss or the traumatic event. And so you sort of get through it, but there are all kinds of triggers that will last the rest of your life, frankly. So nothing a person says is going to, like, fix it, right? You can't really fix this. So, you know, just be honest. It's okay to say that you don't know what to say. Mm-hmm. That is a perfectly great way to start the conversation. I don't know what to say, and I can't imagine what you're feeling or what's going on in your life. And then, frankly, be quiet and just let the person talk, because that's really sort of most of the time what they need. And then take their cues from them, right? Wherever that conversation goes. And if it gets uncomfortable and it gets emotional, that's okay. It's okay, right? Don't feel like you've done the person a disservice because you've made them cry. They will only cry if it's appropriate for them to cry. And by appropriate, I don't mean sort of ethical or the right response. I mean, if crying is what they need to do, then they will cry. And if in this moment crying is not what they need to do, then they won't. And that's perfectly fine, and everyone will respond differently. So just say what's on your heart, right? And the other thing, and this amazed me, amazed Guy and I as we did our research, how many people told us that the easiest way to pare back your address book or your contact list is to experience grief, because in that moment, you will realize who your true friends are, and it's actually very discouraging how many people avoid you and walk away from you, and you decide that maybe the friendship wasn't as strong as you thought it was. Mm-hmm. And I say that to make this point. The other thing people say a lot is, hey, if you need anything, just let me know.
Right.
Well, nobody is ever going to let you know, right? And we make this point in the book as well. It's not what you say, it's what you do, right? So unless you are really going to mean what you say, then don't throw that platitude out there, because it's going to ring shallow and it's going to ring hollow. And when the immediate sort of shock and support that people get when a traumatic event happens goes away and everybody goes back to their jobs and their lives and their families, and the person sort of left there to deal with the situation themselves, that's when they need you. And they don't need you to just say, hey, give me a call if I can help you, right? They actually need you to help. So show up, right? You call them and see how they're doing. You bring the food over. Don't wait for them to ask for it. You, right, whatever it is, right, you go cut their grass because you know they don't feel like doing it. Don't wait for them to say, boy, I wish somebody would cut my grass. That just, I mean, it's hard enough to ask for help. It's even harder in these situations. And in the work environment, the same is true, right? The same is true in the work environment.
I think that's such to show up. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I think that's such important advice, Anthony, that I need to repeat first to say what's on your heart. And so it's okay for people to say, I don't know what to say, or I can't imagine what you're feeling or experiencing. And second, your important strategy is to just be quiet. Take your cues from the other person. Let them talk. Let them emote. And that's so important. We don't like quiet. We don't like silence. And I think it's so important, especially when someone is experiencing loss, to allow them to do it and be okay and have them talk. And then the third strategy that you mentioned that's so important is to really show up. Don't just say you're going to, or if you need me, let me know. Show up, whether you're their best friend, their family member, or a leader in the workplace. And that's so important. Now, Anthony, I know we only have a few minutes left, but I want to talk a little as well about grief, because you explain and define grief. You talk about the five stages of grief in your book. Is there one right way to grieve? And what is grief?
So the answer to your question is, no, there is no right way to grieve. And no two people will experience grief in the same way, regardless of how close they are. My brother and I grieved differently over the loss of my parents, our parents. Two coworkers will grieve very differently over the announcement of the loss of a job or a reduction in force. And so there is no right way or wrong way to grieve. There is no formula for grief. And the reality is there's a couple things that impact grief. One is how close you are to the event that causes the trauma or the grief, right? So be it a person, right? How close are you in that relationship? Or if it's an event, right? How close is that event to you personally? The second thing is the suddenness of the event. Mm-hmm. So something that you could see coming will have a lesser impact on your grief than something that you didn't see, right? And something that you didn't see coming that comes as a total shock may impact you very hard, even if the event is not close to you, right? So if you think about, we've all probably had events that have happened in our lives where you're really sort of emotionally struck by what happened, even though you weren't very close to the person or to the event. And the third thing that impacts how a person grieves, which is probably the most one of the most important, and it is in fact the most overlooked, is none of us know what else people have going on in their lives. Mm. And so you get this compounding factor, that these complicating factors that people are unaware of that cause us on the outside looking in to go, I don't get it. Why are they so emotional over this? Why are they reacting this way when this event is really not that important?
Right. Well, and so there's such important information. We're all out of time, Anthony. I apologize.
Oh, sorry.
But that's such
that's
important
okay.
information for people to understand that there's no one right way to grieve. And we don't know what's going on in people's lives. So how they experience it, what they're thinking, what they're feeling can be so different. And we need to try to be empathic and understand that. Thank you so much for joining us, Anthony. It's wonderful to talk with you. I encourage listeners to read your book for all of this important information. Thank you so much, Anthony.
It's absolutely my pleasure. Thank you so much for allowing us to shed light on this unspoken and this unspoken topic.
Excellent. And again, listeners, if you want more information about Anthony Casablanca or his new book called The Dying Art of Leadership, please go to his website called griefleaders.com. And as always, thanks for listening. I appreciate you. I'm Dr. Terry, and this is the Love Doctor program on Empower Radio. I'm here to help all your relationships, including the one with yourself, be the best they can be. My personal website is Dr. Terry, thelovedoctor.com, where I provide you with science-based relationship advice that's easy to understand and include in your life. So listeners, until next time, be safe, be healthy, and here's to your happy, healthy relationships.